Just a note before this episode starts, we did have an audio issue. Ugh, we always have them. Anytime we have a guest on, we are looking for a website that won't give us issues and we can't find one. But anyway, I will pop back in and finish the story that got cut off in our wonderful chat with Vera. So please enjoy.
Welcome to the Costume Plot.
I'm JoJo Siu.
And I'm Sarah Tim. We're professional designers with a passion for costume design and the performing arts. Our podcast does contain spoilers. Accompanying slideshows for each movie are linked in the episode description.
We hope you'll join us every other week as we delve into the wonderful world of costume design in the Costume Plot. All right. Well, welcome to the Costume Plot. Sarah and JoJo with you again. And we have a lovely visitor today.
Here we are. We're back. Okay. So we have a special guest today, and she is here to talk all about her work on the new Netflix show, The Brother's Son. Please welcome Vera Chow.
Hello. Hello. I'm Vera. Hi.
Hi. So good to have you. This is so exciting.
Yeah, and this show has already gotten so much promotion, so congratulations. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's still going on.
It is.
Like, you know, hey, real quick, how irreverent can I get on this thing? Because I love going.
As irreverent
we honestly
as
love the genuineness, so we're okay with however irreverent you want
to
go.
Yeah, there are things I can't say to WWD. It's like, I'm just going to say, like, it's one of those... I always feel like when big streaming services have shows that are AAPI, they just go, look, here's one. And then they disappear in like 5 days. Mm-hmm. So I was actually surprised that it's still there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. All of my questions relate to that as an AAPI designer. So I'm sure that will come up quite a lot in our conversation today.
Yeah, I was like, oh, they didn't knock it down for the next like Ragnarok or something. No shade, good show. Okay.
And then in streaming too, it's like there's a new show on every single day, so it's pretty. It says something that it is having a lasting conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Griselda came out, and I was like, shit, we're gonna go down another spot. Yeah. I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, hopefully it keeps promoting for an extra long period of time. I know, at least for me, I can't speak for other AAPI, but it was really exciting to just keep seeing more AAPI work out there. And that was definitely one of my first questions, too, were like, how, you know, because it is so easy. We are just starting this kind of wave of this fighting against the stereotype of Asian portrayal in entertainment, but also seeing so much more representation that's out there. And I guess how much of that was a constant question in this show when you were designing or getting your ideas? And how much of it did you bring into it to bring in that nostalgia for the people that are watching or didn't?
I guess like to start... The stereotype is a really big thing. I have a dear friend of mine, and she's not wrong. She's like, oh, great, another thing we need, a show about triads and martial arts.
Right.
I'm sure that has crossed all our minds before. So it does fall onto, well, every department head, but it does specifically fall on costumes a little harder to break those type of stereotypes. Like, I mentioned to my team that I don't want you like Googling anything. Like if you don't speak Chinese, just don't Google anything. If you don't type it, don't Google anything. Cause I really don't want what Pinterest and Google has to give you if you're just typing in the English version of what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to go to Baidu. Like, I mean, that's extreme. That's an extreme sport, but the CCP allow green lighted search engine. You don't have to go that far. But
thank you for explaining that for listeners who don't know what that is.
Yes. The search results are quite fun every once in a while if you want to go look at it. So I did most of my research in At first, it wasn't even any movies or TV. We already know what they wear, like leather jackets, and like the collar is always out, like they're stuck in the 70s.
Oh my gosh.
These are some of the most trendy and wealthy people in the world. And most of their business these days are like semi-legit. You know, like the people that still look like that are the people that do their like dirty stuff for them. The people on the top don't look like that. Like they are, you know, they, I know I'm willing to bet money that my high school best friend's dad is one of these people. And you know, like, oh my gosh, something about him.
Yeah.
But you know, he doesn't walk around like that. He's extremely wealthy and he has these assistants that are men in suits or whatever. But I was like, this doesn't look like a normal job. But so that I want to take the Hollywood out of it. And I was like, will it be boring? No, because actually no one in the world, minus the Asian viewers, have actually seen what these people are really like.
Yeah.
It's not portrayed at all in media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. I feel like that also helps. Well, again, I'm only speaking from an AAPI experience, but it does help me relate a little more to the characters when I'm not seeing someone that's over hyper, you know, Hollywoodized, whatever the right word is, that sort of looks like we sort of curated what we think their costume looks like as opposed to what actual people wear. And we talk about that a lot with our podcast.
The satin embroidered bomber not doing it for you?
Not quite.
I see another one of those things. Like nobody, we don't even have, nobody, I don't even, I cannot keep watching the satin embroidered bomber on Asian shows, be it on the gangster, the sensitive young man that ends up turning a new leaf, or like the innocent, unassuming female protagonist that is wearing that and that's how they found her in the club. Like nobody wears that anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody tries to replicate the Ryan Gosling in Drive kind of vibe.
Right?
And it's like, no, it's okay. We already did it. You don't have to keep trying to
replicate that. I have one just to be ironic.
Yeah.
Like every Asian person I know that has one of these things is wearing it as a joke that this is what people think we wear.
Wow, right. That is hilarious.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
And it's, you know, I think that's something that we don't always talk about too, is like, what are the pieces that we've adapted, whether it's actually for our culture versus as an ironic kind of ploy or comment on culture.
Because
that itself is also just as much fashion, and it kind of goes into the culture with clothing as well. So it's cool to hear that, because we don't always hear that.
We might as well own it.
Like. Yeah, it's very true. Well, and my other big question to you is, you know, you kind of briefly touched on this already a little bit, but in terms of like, you know, the everyday people that are also in this show, because you had tons and tons of just massive crowd scenes. And I'm excited to hear about your experience on that as well. But you know, in terms of deciding like the wealth factor and like the different economical status of all these different people representing real people as well, what were some of your challenges and differentiating between those groups of people so that it made it very clear on the scene while still making them feel very real?
Two big things. Money. However much money you think you have, it's never enough, especially for a POC show. They love under-budgeting for POC shows
absolutely.
Now. I will not name any names. I'm pretty sure he won't be listening to this anyways because he doesn't actually care about our craft. But there is someone pretty high up the totem pole on that's saying, Vera, you're going to bankrupt us with just Jade. And I was like, racist. Will you say that to a show about Pride Month? You're going to bankrupt us with rainbow flags. Or you're going to say it to a black show. You're going to bankrupt us with hair products. Like things that we hold dear to our culture. Like, I was like, why? What? The audacity. Yeah. Like, and I know he probably won't say that to another more marginalized group quite as brazenly. You know? You're going to bankrupt us with, I don't know, like on a show with like a lot of women crew, like, can we stop buying tampons? Like, is that what you're going to say? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like when's the last time you met anyone in Asia that does not have their sun or themselves, like, in some sort of extremely precious jade, actually, because right. They're blessed.
Or gold. And every, that's exactly.
It has nothing to do with whether or not you're rich or poor. It could be handed down mm-hmm. from generations. And I explained to people that they will know if this is for real or not from the jewelry.
Absolutely.
The clothes, maybe not so much. Like, yeah. I mean, like, my uncles, some of them wear dollar store clothing and some of them were Versace. And my mom's side of the family came from a pretty well-off family. You know, like, you don't know. Like,
right.
But sure. Jade, I would say, you look at what they're wearing, you know how long the jade's been around. You could tell mm-hmm. which part of Asia they're from. Maybe they have Southeast Asian roots. You could tell their finances. Mm-hmm. You could tell sometimes their religion and their specific, like, tribal or ethnic background from the jade they wear. Like,
yeah.
I dare you to say that to me again. Like,
yeah.
So that is a really big thing. And also, like, why can't they just be in t-shirt and jeans? Why is everyone in a bespoke suit?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, girl, you're watching too much Tokyo Vice. I don't know what you're thinking, but there is quite one of the biggest challenges is somehow this insensitivity mm-hmm. that is not malicious, but still just callously, unintentionally thrown in our direction mm-hmm. because they as in the general public, I suppose. I don't know. That's what I mean. That's what I mean by careful. I can go real hard with topics. is that, like, they learn the vocabulary slowly, if they even did, but they're educated on the vocabulary on how to first slowly, how to be, you know, not sound like a douche with non-binary people. And then slowly you learn how to not sound like a douche with, you know, the Black community. But, like, I don't know why they don't feel like, be it the model minority myth or be it there has never been open strife that we, like, started big shit with them. Mine is like, don't hurt us over COVID. Like, we haven't started any big movement
right.
against the narrative. So I can tell you right now, even in big studios, they really haven't learned that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I've definitely had that experience as well.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. I think that does make such a huge statement too, though, of the small things that people don't pay attention to or take into account when it comes to, okay, but if you actually want these characters to feel real and to make an impact on the audience that's watching this, we have to make the character yes. real. That means it has to have yes. the details that matter. Like, this mm-hmm. is film, for heaven's sake. You know, like,
yes,
in theater, it's live. So sometimes you can get away with it, but it doesn't make it any less important. And I think that's the other thing, too, is, like, with theater, there's even more of that, like, oh, well, you can just throw something on. It won't really matter. And I'm like, look, it doesn't matter that it's live. Someone in the audience is going to know if that's real or not. Like, that doesn't.
I hate it when people say that.
Devalue
like,
that.
Just throw something on them. I was like, why don't you say that to the lighting team? Like, why don't you say that to, you know, our version of, like, why do you say the G&E? They'll probably mm-hmm. walk out on the job and have the union shut you down for saying something yeah. that disrespected their ego. Like, and yet you say that to us all the time. Just put something on them. It doesn't matter. Like, just because you can't dress doesn't mean. My cast can't dress.
Well, it's like, thanks for saying that my art form doesn't matter to you. Right. Great. I love knowing that yeah. you don't value my work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though we're understand. Often the first thing you see, sometimes yeah. even before the actress face, like.
We are the only below the line department, which I don't even know our below the line, but sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're the only below the line department that actually has a visibility and fan base and creative following as high as above the line.
Yeah.
That we get no credit for.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure we could talk about
so
that all day.
True.
Yeah. Sometimes I see Funko Pops with my work on it and I'm like, I didn't know this was happening.
Uh-huh. Like, I could have gotten the residuals for that.
Oh gosh.
I'm sure yeah. that must be so frustrating too.
Right? I could either buy it and throw, like, darts at it or just whatever.
You just did not work.
Or secretly use the company card and buy it. That.
hey, you technically paid for this.
That's right. Exactly.
So I guess in terms of how massive this project was, let's kind of go back to that a little bit. What were some of the challenges? I know we've talked about, obviously, the stereotypical and sort of more ignorant challenges that you had to face. But in terms of your own process of design, what were some of the challenges or maybe things that you didn't find so challenging when it came to actually coming up with the different visions for these characters?
The practical challenge that comes with this is, you know, if these people are all wealthy and then you kill them, they all die, they get into fights, they all have like a photo double, a stunt double, and sometimes they have multiple stunt doubles because the stunts are so crazy.
Yeah.
I cannot, like, I'm not actually putting you in insane designer clothing because then you will all cost like $30,000 per human, per change.
Right.
You know, and I don't even think Sandy Powell can wing that on like Aviator with her $1 million budget.
Yeah.
You know, so that being a big part of it, the second part of that is like the aesthetics of where they get their clothing from, wealthy or not, is not what you buy.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them, they do their big sweep when they visit home or even when they walk into a designer store. If I see a bunch of AAPI, like, you know, Asian people walk into a designer store, from what they come out, what they choose, I can be like, that guy's Laotian, that guy's Chinese, that guy's Japanese, this guy's second generation. Like, you can kind of tell from what they would pick.
Yeah.
Like,
and
so
how they style it too. Yeah.
Exactly. So that alone, I can't, no amount of money can fix that. So what we end up doing is actually a lot of our stuff, minus the main cast. Don't worry, Justin, Sam, I never put you in Amazon. Or did I? Like, but a lot of them are, yeah, just a little bits and pieces. But, you know, a lot of them are thrifted. A lot of them are actually truly like Amazon or like just really, really cheap stuff. We've bought bed sheets, pillowcases as fabric.
I think I read that in one of the articles. Yeah. I was like, wow, it's actually, that's awesome.
It's actually cheaper than getting bespoke fabric. They're going to get covered in blood anyways. Like, who cares?
Right.
You can get nice stuff if you, I love buying fabric secondhand. So I am on.
Yes.
Sarah did that with a lot of upholstery.
Yes.
Yes. All the way.
Bed sheets, couch fabrics, curtain fabrics. You don't even need to interface it. It's already stiff as fuck.
Yeah.
Exactly. So those are helpful. I had a wonderful tailor that really could whip out these patterns from scratch.
Amazing.
So that's kind of why the stuff is really hard to track for some of them, is because they are bought in like this, and then I redyed, recut, completely took the whole thing apart and put it back together.
Yeah,
so we were heavy on manpower, but not so much heavy on the retail price of clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's such a testament to how much work we do, but also how much we have to be creative to make something work. Because it's not like we can just go to the Home Depot and like get a bunch of wood and it can create whatever we want. Like, we do have to sort of source from a variety of very unusual places and sometimes places that no one would ever think about to look for the things we need.
Girl, I got accounting up my ass telling me I'm defrauding them because of being creative. They're like, Vera's buying her own home stuff on job money. I was like, just because you have no creativity.
Like, do you want to sit in my studio and see me dye this bed sheet?
Yeah. They're like asking why I would buy like manicure products or like, you know, I was like, girl, like, you don't, what the, like,
you clearly don't know what I do.
I don't even know how to say at that point. Like, I'm not even offended at that point. I was just like, if I want to defraud you, honey, it wouldn't be that obvious. And I wouldn't be buying $30 bed sheets. I'll go hard on like the different cotton count. Like what?
You're like, so I have to explain that. House on your budget.
Right. Yeah.
No.
I have to explain that every week to them.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So we left them all the bed sheets in like a pile and be like, here.
Here you go. This is proof that I'm not just defrauding you of all these home goods.
Enjoy. Enjoy these Amazon sheets.
Oh, gosh. That's hilarious. Wow. Now, did that help with some of the, I mean, I guess I'm curious if you used a lot of that in the scenes. I'm thinking specifically of a lot of the Mahjong scenes, because those for me felt very like home. And so I meant to ask you about that, because I was like, ooh, that really makes me feel like I'm home with my family, because those are things and patterns that I really recognize that, because my family also is sort of on either side. Like one side of the family is very well off, mm-hmm. and the other side came a little bit more from sort of lower income to middle class.
Same.
So it was really interesting seeing all of that and being like, wow, I really resonate with that. Because my family wears things like that. So was that really exciting for you as you were designing these characters and these worlds that you were creating?
Oh, that was really fun. I mean, as you know, two of the Mahjong aunties, one was Justin's mom and one is actually our show creator, Byron's mom.
Yeah.
So it's like so not them because, you know, that they're not the Mahjong aunties. They got a huge kick out of it. We actually truly did go to Dynasty Center and like a lot of like LA Chinatown, St. Gabriel Valley. We bought most of those things there while laughing. We're like, oh my God, look at this. And then we'll buy it. And then we'll hold it up and be like, this is horrific. And then we'll buy it.
Perfect. So did you have a lot of the, well, I guess not a lot, but did some of the actors actually go shopping with you when you were picking out outfits? If you did do retail, I guess. Okay.
No.
So it's just
a habit I would like them to stop. Like, you know, I don't know how it is in theater, and I feel like a lot of actors do want to say that every once in a while. Mm-hmm. That's as uncomfortable for me as a director sitting there for a fitting.
Yeah.
I'm like, can you leave?
It's a slippery slope, like on like how much power you give someone in those situations. I feel like you have to be given the space to like do it yourself before you get feedback from other
people. Yes. It's like if I was like, why don't I sit next to you and have lunch while you rewrite your script? You know, it's the equivalent. It's such
look over your shoulder,
Yeah, you guys know, like, fitting an actor is only 50% of fitting. 50% is a mind game to kind of, like, I mean, that sounds really bad when I say mind game in case an actor is listening to this. It's a psychology session. It's extremely... The clothing is just a fraction of what we go into. Mm-hmm. Like, clothing, I know what I want to put on this person. Like, you know, I'm sure you two are the same. The second it goes on someone, we know if it works or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why it takes hours and hours is... it's the dance. Mm-hmm. It's not the piece of clothing itself. Like, it's the dance that goes into it. And you very quickly understand if an actor, you know, we're the first to pick out if they might have body dysmorphia, insecurities, how they look at this character, you will find out in 5 minutes is completely different from what the director is thinking. Then you are in deep shit because you will be the person responsible for fixing that. Like, like it's
trying to come up with a solution that sort of meets in the middle of that too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So your job is actually mostly that. Mm-hmm. So it's, so I'm happy that the two showrunners and director, they left me alone most of the time. They basically let me do whatever the heck I want on this show, and
yay. I'm
very grateful for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that can be rare too. You know, we hear a variety of things. Sometimes the relationship is great. Other times it's, as most of us expect, very horrible. So
we expect the worst.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad to hear that that was a good process for the
It was. They were amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I guess, so just for our listeners, this is more of a question of kind of the daily, and we've gone into this a little bit, but sort of what your daily kind of day-to-day, or sorry, I guess like hourly breakdown of what a typical day on this project was like for you. Because it can vary on project to project, but...
I mean, the prep took a while, you know, we went to, I mean, in my last 3-4 years, I actually did a lot of jobs that are AAPI content. Thank the Lord. I love that.
Yes.
I'm not religious. I don't know why I said that, but thank whatever is out there. Because my current job is AAPI. Brother Sun was AAPI. And I did a movie in Hong Kong called with Byron Mann that is also AAPI.
Oh, great.
So it's, I've never been to so many Chinatown in my life.
That's awesome.
So that, so like, that. So that's a new process for me. Like, I definitely did not do that. Clearly, what Chinatown for The Walking Dead? But this, the process was a lot of Chinatown. A new part of the process is my non-Asian shopper calling me going like, can you tell them what I'm trying to say? That's a new thing, like in recent projects.
Like, yeah.
But the research, like, I mean, during prep, clearly it was a lot of research, which is very little on Pinterest, but more on actual Taiwanese news and Chinese news. And if it's actually any film project, it's Chinese film projects in Chinese. So that was just all typing in Chinese and, you know, fun stuff. And also learning to realize I don't know as much as I think, because I grew up as the person, you know, I grew up from there. Mm-hmm. Most of the API creatives are American born, Canadian born. So there was a lot of pressure on me to be the verifier of everything. Ooh. But I grew up in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Sometimes I that's do the worst, more. Though.
Mm-hmm. I was put in that awkward cut situation quite a few times. Because growing up in Hong Kong, I do know more than them, possibly. But Hong Kong and Taiwan and Singapore is still different. And I can't speak for every Chinese person in the world. Like,
right.
So there was a pressure there. But that aside, you know, that's so hard. Prep, shoot, rap, you know, they're all different. So, aside from shopping, fittings, the show has very unusual fittings, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So the dinosaur fitting was...
I was really going to say.
That was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. I want to start posting some of the behind-the-scenes rehearsals. Like, because I put it on first, and then my assistant put it on first.
Obviously.
And there's a series of video that easily could have gone to HR's abuse, because it's us trying to kick each other and hit each other to see what happens to the invitation. And then, you know, it bounces back and see, like, in 3 seconds, it reinflates. Oh, cool. Oh, this one's deflating. Like,
you know? It's like all the things we have to test costumes too. Like,
that's
one of the perks. I think that's one of the joys and perks of the job is that you get to try it. If it's something cool, you get to put it on first. Yeah. That's just a rule.
I was like, kick harder. She's like, I can't. Like, so it's a lot of the fittings are very action oriented, and I just always make them to do all kinds of weird shit when they're fitting. And then when we're shooting, I don't know. I'm very hands-on. I'm those designers that are like, oh, my hair is a mess. Thank God.
No worries. No one will see it.
Yeah. So, I am very hands-on, and I take this show so personally. So I do show up, and I check everyone. I check every single background person. Yeah. It doesn't mean I don't trust my background costumers. They're amazing. I hope they don't think I'm micromanaging. It's just, you know.
You just like to do the last once over.
Yes. So, it's just lots of fittings, a lot of shopping, a lot of being on set. The on-set part is clearly the best because you get to watch it happen. Mm-hmm. Was that the final episode, second to last final episode, when all the triad had their meeting? Oh, no, it's not even remote.
I think it was the last episode. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one, I don't know, 20 years in the game, I still get like a kid when I watch a big scene unfold.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's where producers go, look, she's so green, I'll be like, you need more joy in your life. Because to this day, when I watch, that's the biggest thing, right? Yeah. And to have such a big scene correlate to your culture and a culmination of everything I've been doing since I was a child. I was watching that. I was like, like my team and I, there's a lot. My team is half Asian, at least. We're all like children. We're all like tapping our feet. We're all like all giddy and like, you know, like we're just so excited when we watch that happen. So that's the best part of the job.
I think that if you lose that, like, why are you still doing? Because it's not like any of us are in this job to get rich.
Definitely not.
For all the stress, definitely not.
if you don't have that moment of like pride and excitement and just like pure joy, like seeing it all come together, then like, what are you here for? Because that's the best part.
that's all we got.
Not
the money, not the pension, not the insurance, none of that. None of that.
Yeah.
Especially once you look at what a production designer makes in comparison.
Oh, yeah. I've had that conversation with multiple people, and I'm like, this is just depressing looking at the numbers.
I know. I love my production designer friends. Yeah. It's not them. It's the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yes. I'm like, wait, you can make how much more than me? I was like, what the heck?
Why?
Do you have merch? Because I do. Like,
I'm not even getting residuals for it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So funny.
So my
last question before we kind of move to asking about how you got into costumes. How are we doing on time? Do I have time for another
question? Yeah, I have a question. Yeah, yeah. I have a question too. I have one.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Sarah. I'll let you ask it. I've been asking all the questions.
I mean, mine might not be so much of a question as like, this is my favorite and I want to know more about it. My personal favorite costume was TK's pink suit.
Oh my god, thank you for not saying what is Michelle wearing. I love talking about that too, but my joy is from things like that.
I am a real streetwear fan. I love streetwear, so like those are always going to be my favorite, but I loved that pink suit, and it had the blazer had like a tiny blazer on it, and so
yeah, and the
I
pants
simply,
have also a tiny pant on it.
I must know like what the origin of that outfit is. Because I'm obsessed with
that, first of all, we reach out to a lot of AAPI brands. A lot of them are old friends of mine or you know, friends of friends. So I am friends with quite a few people in opening ceremony. So I looked at what we could use right off the bat, not that much. But then I saw this sweatsuit they have. It's bright white and it's a sweatsuit on a sweatsuit on a short on a short. And I was like, ooh, I was like, I don't care. And I remember my team was like, there is a white sweatsuit, literally a complete no-no for filmmaking. I was like, just you wait. I got plans. And then I call my friend Bettina, who works for opening ceremony. And I was like, so are there legal repercussions to how much I can or cannot deface the logo of opening ceremony? Because I was like, I got ideas. And she said, oh, whatever. It's fine. Like, you know,
how far can
we know
I go?
You're not there to do anything. So I was like, so I'm going to turn it into the suit. And then so I was like, what color has TK not worn yet? And, you know, he's wearing all the colors that the boys are not wearing. So I'm not letting him do like emerald green or stuff like that. We decided to dye it pink because he can do it. And it's his version of like, it's a try it meeting. I have to be in a suit. This is serious. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then we realized once we dyed it pink that the little sweater and the pants don't really stand out. So my amazing age or dyer, Ricardo, I was like, can you take them off and dye them just like a shade darker? Like just a little bit darker. So it's a little bit darker. Maybe it's two shades. Well, Ricardo, I asked for one shade. I'm just kidding. Just so it stands out more. And then it was like we have to shoot him the next day. And they're like, are you happy? And I was like, you guys are going to kill me. It's just bothering me that now this is a suit and the little things are not suits. Like, so.
Okay, editing Sarah popping in here. This is where our audio cut out. But basically, the end of that story is that Vera said that it was one of those projects where it literally only mattered to her. And so she ended up doing it herself. She made the little pants and blazer on the pants and blazer herself because it just was something that she really needed to do and wanted to do. And we talked about how sometimes as designers, like, there is that kind of small project where you're just like, this little detail really matters to me, so I'm going to do it myself. And then we started back up the recording. Enjoy the rest.
So we're going to skip to our final question. But, you know, we've been talking already a little bit about, you know, you've done this for a very long time. But tell us a little bit about how you really got into costumes and what kind of was the aha moment where you realized this was what you wanted to do.
So the...
the very public response that I've had was I was bullied. I mean, I'm trying to spice this up a little bit, but like I was a victim of severe bullying in high, middle school, elementary, a little bit of high school, but yeah. It's like, you know, also wasn't helpful. It was in a culture and a time where school bullying and mental health was not recognized yet because it was like the 80s and the 90s. And being in Asia, it also means creativity, neurodivergence, anything of that nature, there's just something wrong with you. So it wasn't a great time for me, and I had no friends. And do I have friends now? Who knows? Hey, so, and then, so now, and then I just went into that rabbit hole of, you know, anime, manga, sci-fi, Star Wars. And that was kind of my, that's what, and that was like, you know, very young. And then it was when Cirque du Soleil then came to Hong Kong for the first time. And they have all these behind the scene things. And that's the first time I realized costume designer is a job. And then, yeah, that was the moment. Sultan Bunko from Cirque du Soleil was what did it for me. So I still go to every Cirque du Soleil show. Wow. Disappointing, because lately they have been commercializing and some of their shows really, like, but you know, they're original big shows. I go to every single one, like like a nerd. Yeah.
I do love that they bring so many people backstage to be able to see that world from a young age. So it definitely is something that not all, I think we're starting to do that a little more now where you're seeing more of the behind the scenes and appreciating it more, but that wasn't done for a very long time.
Right. Yes. They always just only show us in passing tying someone's shoes, like we're their servant, and then they move on. I have a rule, though.
I don't. What a costume designer does.
Yeah, I do have a rule. Unless that actor cannot put their shoes on by themselves because of some stunts or something, I was like, anything they can do on their own every fucking day in the morning, you're not tying their shoes for them. You're not like buttoning a shirt for them. Like you're 100%. Not. Like they can do this on their own. Like
they're capable.
Yeah, we can. We need.
If I put them in a corset and I forgot to tell them to put the shoes on first.
Exactly. So like we need to change the narrative. So many people think we work for them. There's a difficult dynamic for especially set costumers. With designers, we can still be like, whatever, I can walk away. But like, there's something about set costumers that is a huge victim of bullying from, and as you can tell, that is a big thing for me in terms of combating bullying, that they're afraid to tell their boss, which is the designer or the supervisor, because they don't want to start shit or rock the boat, or they think that we will side with the star and not with them, because a lot of us do, because we are actually also afraid. And that is a never-ending systemic situation of costume department being historically women and being historically not taken seriously. And it leads to my team not telling me when they're bullied or when actors treat them, even female actors treat them like they work for them.
It's really awful.
I'm sure you guys have seen that before.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. You don't grab their coffee.
Sarah
you
and I have known each other for a long time, and I'm usually the person that's causing fights. So
me too.
All right, I got to take it down so that I don't just get myself fired before I start.
I do think,
that's always me.
That might be something, all three of us have in common. I have a keen sense of injustice. And when I see power being abused, especially relating to me or people who I am, my peers and in my department, I will fight. I'm the one ready to throw hands about it.
Especially if there's someone who doesn't feel they can fight. You feel like you have to fight on their behalf.
It doesn't always end well for us.
Yes.
You know? True. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also what I'm really excited and glad when I can find other people that have similar mindset. And I'm like, okay, you actually support the people that are trying to fight for the little people, you know?
I know.
You actually are supporting this and behind
there can be more. there can be more.
Absolutely, for sure.
It's better than before. Yes.
Very slowly. It's a slow, slow process. Yes. For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There's hope, but you know, we have all experienced when a costume designer somehow throw hands. Sometimes I have this visual image of, you know, those like robot little punching things. Mm-hmm. Like that's how they look at us. Like they think it's like funny that we're angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're like, oh, she's so mad. Like she's fighting for racial injustice. And they're like, I was like waiting for them to like pet me on the head or something.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You can just see it in their eyes.
It's really horrible.
Oh, me too. Yeah. You can just see it in their eyes that they don't. It's not the same eyes when a grip is complaining about something way smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
very true.
I mean, girl, it still happens.
Well, you're not alone. I mean, that's not that much encouragement, but you know, you're not alone.
But it's good to know that we're all going to throw hands, you know?
Yeah. And like, scrappy people get on the same team. Stick around.
If enough of us throw hands, they would be like, oh, these little things are scary.
It's true.
We also have sharp implements. We have a lot of sharp implements at our disposal.
Yes. Yes.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Well, thank you so much. This was such a fun conversation, Vera. I don't have any other questions, and I know we are tight on time. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
If you want, you can send us just a quick, or at least for our listeners, what a quick way to find your work or pictures of your work.
Yeah, you're on
Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We'll tag you in the description and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I'm Vera Chow Designs across the board for everything. Email, website, and Instagram. Technically, I have a Twitter. Oh, they call it X now. I don't do that. I'm too old for that. So I don't even think
I got on board with Twitter X when it was big. So
I used to use it for the podcast and I would tweet about all of our episodes, but I left because when Elon Musk bought it, hate speech got like completely like unbanned, so it's like a cesspool over there now. So I don't use it for the podcast anymore.
Yeah, I don't tweet. No. I don't TikTok either.
Me neither.
I heard they call it because it's X. Someone makes fun of it and they go like, "Are you going to excrete?"
Oh,
you're welcome for that one.
What a horrible mental image. Yes. That's
lovely.
I'm gonna excrete.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, it's what he deserves, though. That's the right term for what he's in charge of. Anyway,
side note.
Thank you so much for joining us. This was such a fun conversation. And we are so excited that this show is doing well. And what a fun time we've had. Yay.
Yay.
Thank you, listeners. Please make sure you just find us on Instagram. We will have our next episode posted very soon.
Yeah, we will. And thanks
for joining us.
Everyone.
Thanks,
Vera. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Costume Plot. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Costume Plot. If you have a question, comment, or a movie suggestion, you can email us at thecostumeplot@gmail.com.
Our theme music is by Jesse Timp, and our artwork is by Jojo Siu. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.